All right, good evening. It's 7 o'clock. We'll get started. I'm Jeff Merrill, the Director of Planning and Development for the Municipality of the District of Lunenburg, being that this is the first Planning and Advisory Committee meeting since Council's appointments in November, and we recently had some appointments to the members at large. Our first item on the agenda is the nomination and election of chair and vice chair. So I'll call the meeting to order. I'd like to acknowledge that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. We are live streaming tonight. If there's any issues for those watching on the live stream about seeing the presentation slides, if you go on our engage.modl.ca website under the Osprey Village Amendments, a copy of the presentation can be downloaded there and you can follow along. All right, so first up, I will call for nomination for chair of the Planning Advisory Committee. And Councillor Brooks, where you're online, if you would like to email your nomination to me, I can include that.
I guess I need to try to refer to see who I would be nominating, because I do not have that list in front of me. Do you have such a list there, Jeff, that you can share with me?
Yes.
Or just, yeah, do the ballot.
All right, I'm just going to, I'll send you the list right quick. All right, Councillor Brooks, you should get an email shortly. I'm getting this spinning wheel. But while we wait for that to be delivered, I can just read off the names. Eligible is for chair is Councillor Bell, Councillor Moore, Councillor DeLong, Councillor Brooks, members at large Keith Drysdale, Michael Hurdle, Gary Mailman, and Ann Meck. For nomination of chair, we have Gary Mailman, Councillor DeLong, Councillor Brooks, Councillor Moore, so we have four nominations for chair.
Is that including Councillor Brooks' nomination from the email?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for checking. We have Gary Mailman, Councillor DeLong, Councillor Brooks, and Councillor Moore. I would ask if you accept the nomination. Can you use your mic, please?
I respectfully decline.
I decline as well, too.
And I do as well, Jeff.
There you go.
Okay.
Fine.
All right.
Fine.
Do you accept?
I accept.
All right. Well, we'll declare you can come take over the chair, and we'll do the vice chair nominations. So, for the record, we'll note Councillor DeLong is the chair of the Planning Advisory Committee.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So moving on, we now call for nominations for vice chair.
Correct.
Great.
I'll read the nominations for vice chair, Gary Mailman, Ann Meck, Councillor Moore, Councillor Bell, Councillor Brooks, so we got five nominations. So I'll ask, we have member at large, Gary Mailman. Do you accept the nomination?
No, I think at this time I'll respectfully decline it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ann Meck, do you accept the nomination?
I'll accept it.
Okay. Councillor Moore?
I decline.
Decline. Councillor Bell.
I'll leave my name stand.
And Councillor Brooks, do you accept the nomination?
I need to decline at this time.
Okay. So we have two names. For the election of chair. Vice Chair, sorry. That's why I don't chair the meeting. So on your next ballot is a vote for vice chair of Councillor Bell or member at large Ann Meck. All right, I'll read the I'll read the ballots for vice chair. We have Councillor Bell, Ann Meck, Councillor Bell, and Ann Meck. So with that, 4-3. Yep.
How many members are there? That doesn't make sense.
Pardon me?
How many of us are there? 2, 4,
it's
6,
one, two,
7.
Three, four,
okay.
5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that does it.
Yep.
Yeah. All righty.
So we'll let you. Councillor Bell, the vice chair.
Okay. I declare Councillor Bell to be our vice chair for this committee. A motion has been made to destroy the ballots. Can I have a seconder?
Second.
Oh, great. Thank you.
The chair has to eat them.
Okay. Give me a fork and knife. All right. So moving down the agenda, approval of minutes for Thursday, September 26th, 2024. Do we need a motion for that? Or yeah. Okay. Motion, please.
What was it?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Oh, I can't because I wasn't here.
I think you skipped one.
Did I? My mistake. I need a motion for approval of the agenda.
That I can do.
Moved by Kathy Moore, seconded by Gary. All those in favor?
In favor.
Thank you, Councillor Brooks. Okay, that is passed. Now I will look for a motion to approve the minutes of Thursday, September 26th.
I so move.
It would have to be Ann.
Yeah, because me. Yeah, Ann Mack.
I think that people who weren't present can move on that. I'm not entirely sure.
It's okay.
Move by Ann Mack.
Yeah,
second.
Please.
Second.
By Councillor Bell. All those in favor, please signify. Okay.
Favor.
Thank you, Councillor Brooks. Motion passed. Okay.
Chairwoman mm-hmm. DeLong.
Certainly.
Might I suggest just to not interrupt the meeting, if I don't agree with anything in one of the motions, perhaps I can say that instead, and it'll help keep things smoother for you guys. Does that make any sense? I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to be voting remotely, so if you want to clarify that, I'm happy to
sure,
do whatever just, the count the chair decides.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Merrill.
Yeah, yes, you can vote remotely. And I think the preference would be that you indicate that you're either in favor or not. Whether
okay.
that's, you know, you have an option, you could turn your video on, or you could speak up, or the other way is you could raise your hand, like the function button, raise your hand. Yeah.
But. Oh, great. Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay.
Okay, so you got some options. Okay, moving down the agenda, item 7.1, Osprey Village Secondary Planning Strategy and Land. I have to read the procedure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Harrietha. Okay. The procedure for addressing the committee. An opportunity will be provided to all citizens to address the committee on each agenda item shown on this agenda or added to the agenda by the committee. Individuals who wish to address the committee are asked to note the following. On each matter on the committee's agenda, the chair will seek public comment upon the completion of staff's presentation. Each person shall state their name. All statements and questions shall be directed to the chairperson. Presentations shall be limited to 10 minutes. Persons wishing to address the committee a second time will be given an opportunity to do so once all others in attendance have had the opportunity to address the committee. Persons addressing the committee for a second time shall limit their presentations to 5 minutes. Anyone wishing to address the committee on a matter not included on this agenda can have the matter added to the next meeting's agenda by contacting Jeff Merrill, Director of Planning, at 902-541-1340 or by email at planning@modal.ca. Okay. And so with that, we will move along to item 7.1, Osprey Village Secondary Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw Amendments. And I will turn this over to Corinne.
Hi, Corinne. Do you want to share your slides?
Just bear with us for a moment, please.
Yeah. I see your lips moving, but we can't hear you.
I'm going to give Corinne just a moment to get some technical issues out of the way.
Can people hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yes, you can.
Okay, perfect. I'm wondering if I also join on my laptop, I can still share my slides there, I think, even if you can't hear me on that end.
Yeah, you should be able to, yeah.
Okay, I will do that now. Sorry, I apologize for these technical difficulties here. So good evening, everyone. Again, apologies for the technical difficulties. Thank you to everyone attending in person, and thank you to everyone watching our live stream. So we are still waiting on part of our streaming equipment to get fully updated. I'm not sure if Jeff kind of gave the rundown before the recording started, but so my slides will be visible to those attending in person. But it will not show up to those watching on the live stream. So we kindly ask those watching from home to follow along with the slides uploaded on our Engage site for this project. So if you go to the Osprey Village Planning Amendments page on our Engage Modal website, you can find the slides on the right-hand side of the page. Under Documents, it's titled Osprey Village Amendments Planning Advisory Committee Presentation. Sorry, I'm just going to put my here so I can see my slides as well. So without further ado, let's get into the presentation. So just as a bit of an overview, Osprey Village, while continuing to grow and develop, has planning policies and regulations with several inconsistencies, which have come to light due to recent development interest. Many of these policies stem from the history of how the current planning documents of Osprey Village came to be, which is a combination of two separate planning areas being combined back in 2022, in addition to certain lots being zoned for types of development that are no longer suitable for said lots. So as a result, several lots in the Osprey Village planning area have designations or zoning that no longer align with the area's current needs and hinder appropriate development. So council has directed staff to review the proposed amendments with the Planning Advisory Committee tonight. We'll also be going over a short review of our process so far with this project, including a notice of amendment. A notice of the amendment process being sent out back in February 4th this month. A public posting was also made on Modal's website, Facebook page, and Engage website, and a public information session was held on February 5th, and we'll get into more detail about that and the next steps later in this presentation. So this is just an agenda of what we'll be covering in this presentation. So we'll first go have an overview of the affected areas, then we'll kind of get more into the nitty-gritty, so the existing regulations and area-specific planning issues. Then we'll do a brief review of the public information session that happened earlier this month, and then we'll go over some of the stakeholder engagement we did, as well as the implications or the feedback we received from these stakeholders. As well as some outstanding feedback that we haven't quite gotten back yet from certain stakeholders. Then we'll make the final recommendations that staff is making to the PAC tonight and next steps for this project. First, let's get an overview of the affected areas. So this is just a satellite view of Osprey Village. So we can see pockets of development happening within the village as well as outside. There's some residential growth kind of growing out of Osprey Village, as well as currently vacant lots that hold a lot of potential due to their proximity to amenities and current development. And so just kind of overlaying that satellite view with this zoning map of Osprey Village, we can break down the zones that make up the plan area. I've also highlighted the three areas that are being affected by these changes or potential changes. So there are three areas identified within Osprey Village where the current designation and zoning hinder the potential for suitable development that were the catalyst for the recommendations to amend the planning documents. So we have Area 1 on Harold Wynot Road, currently zoned industrial, Area 2 along Alley Chaplain Drive, and Nathan Cirillo Road. This is currently zoned institutional. This is where the municipal office as well as the French school is located on, and Area 3, which is a small corner lot on Pine Grove Road, which is currently undeveloped and zoned high-density residential. So we can start getting into the specific areas, the current land use regulations applied to them, and the challenges related to this current zoning or designation. So first we have Area 1 on Harold Wynot Road. Area 1 is a property designated under industrial in the secondary planning strategy, or the SBS, and zoned institutional in the land use bylaw, or the LUB. The property is approximately 48,000 square meters, or 520,000 square feet, and it's located at the corner of Harold Wynot Road, where it turns to intersect with Danica Drive, as shown in the map here. So there has been recent interest from developers to develop the property for residential use. However, under the permitted uses list for the light industrial zone here, high-density residential is the only type of residential development that is permitted. And in the LUB, high-density specifically means 25 units per hectare. So this number and this expectation for high-density residential across the plan area came about when the current Osprey Village plan area was updated back in 2022, when the original Osprey Village plan merged with what used to be the Lunenburg Municipal Industrial Planning Area. So we'll see what that looks like visually in the next slide, but essentially the important thing to note is that the original boundary of Osprey Village is either already serviced or will likely be serviced in the future, and either has or will have the capacity to support high-density residential, where lands including Area 1 currently have no plans to be serviced anytime soon. So while promoting high-density development in serviced areas does make sense, like it makes efficient use of existing infrastructure, applying the same standards to unserviced areas can hinder housing development where maybe lower density residential development is currently the only viable option. So amending the Osprey Village secondary planning strategy and land use bylaw to remove this 25 units per hectare minimum density requirement for unserviced areas within Osprey Village will help to permit the scale of residential development that is feasible for properties without future access to, say, things like central water and sewage infrastructure. So we find it important to just kind of highlight the question of how do we specify like which unserviced properties will be given this exemption, because as mentioned a little earlier, there are currently unserviced lands in Osprey Village that either are going to, like, there are already plans to service those areas, or it's likely that they will be in the near future, whereas there are other unserviced areas that there currently aren't any plans. So how do we differentiate which unserviced lands will get the exemption and which won't? So here we have a map representing so these two planning areas that merged back in 2022. So on the left, in blue, in number one, this is what the original Osprey Village plan area was prior to 2022. So a lot of this area is already serviced or is likely to be serviced in the near future. And then the orange area in this map here on the right, number two, a lot of, like, this currently is not serviced and there aren't really any plans in the near future to be serviced either. I don't know if, can you see my mouse here?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Perfect. So essentially these four properties are the only currently vacant lots that are kind of the focus of this planning challenge. And so we're thinking that only a few properties should have the high density requirement removed. And so specifying these for PID specifically in the LUB as being exempt from the high density residential requirement due to their unserviced nature would be an appropriate way of like how to go about amending this. So that is the first recommendation that we're making there. Moving on to area two, area two is currently designated under community use in the SPS, and it is zoned specifically as institutional under the LUB. The area encompasses approximately 250 square meters of land along Nathan Serlo Road and Allie Champlain Drive. So this area was originally designated and zoned in anticipation for a larger recreational facility. However, the site for this development was ultimately moved elsewhere. So because the designation and zoning of this area was chosen specifically for a development that's not ever going to happen on this location, in addition to the permitted uses for institutional, the institutional zone being very restrictive to only being institutional uses, it has become a bit of a hindrance for the growth of other potential developments, such as residential use or commercial use. That leads us to the second recommendation, is to amend the secondary planning strategy and land use bylaw to rezone this area to permit other types of development. Thing we need to kind of note here is that we have a couple of options on how to go about this. When I mentioned that several properties encompass Area 2, we kind of have to break down the ownership structure of these different properties that make up Area 2. Some of these properties that are highlighted in yellow, the one over here is the French Language School. And then the one immediately underneath there is provincially owned. And then the one on the right-hand side that's along Nathan Cirillo Road is the Lumia Health Center. So this is owned by a third-party company. Important to note is all of the land other than these three properties are owned by the municipality. To accommodate the flexibility to allow residential and commercial uses in Area 2, we've come up with two options to consider. So option one would be to rezone only the modal-owned properties from institutional to general commercial, which would permit commercial and residential uses as of right, specifically in those areas or in those properties. So this option would require amendments to both the secondary planning strategy and land use bylaw in order to change both the designation and zoning of these properties. As I mentioned before, the zone is currently institutional, so if we were to change it to, say, something like high-density residential or general commercial, we would have to change the designation from community use to, say, like residential use or commercial use. Option two would be to amend the Osprey Village land use bylaw, so just the LUB, to permit commercial and residential uses within the institutional zone. So instead of rezoning, we would just add those two uses in the permitted uses list within the institutional zone. Some of the potential outcomes of these two options. Option one would provide the most direct way of permitting commercial and residential uses in the area by just permitting it as of right through rezoning. And this would also prevent the future uses or expansions of the French Language School from being affected by potentially conflicting interests. The pros would be that. The cons would be that this would require amendments to both the SPS and the LUB. So it would require amendments to both planning documents of Osprey Village. The implications for option two to just add commercial and residential uses as permitted in the permitted uses list of institutional zone and not rezoning. This would require less steps, so it would only require amendments to the LUB alone. as it would only involve adding the two uses to the list. But properties like the French language school and other, like, you know, strictly institutional uses that may not wish for more flexibility would be affected, as well as also changing the intention of the institutional zone itself. And then the third area, so area three is a triangular property of approximately 18,000 square meters. It's at the corner of Nathan Cirillo Road and Pine Grove Road. So it's currently designated under residential in the SPS, and it's specifically zoned as high-density residential in the LUB. So while there has been actually several discussions in the past to develop this property under the high-density zoning regulations, several constraints, such as the lot size as well as the type of soil, make high-density residential development quite difficult. I've been told that site assessments from previous development interests always, like, usually came back as, like, this would be extremely difficult to actually try and go ahead with high-density residential development. As the property has been largely undisturbed and contains natural features, its use could be better reflected by rezoning to open space. Much like Area 2, the rezoning option for Area 2, changing this third property and rezoning it and redesignating it would require amendments to both the secondary planning strategy and land use bylaw, because we're changing not only the zone, but the designation of this land as well. So that would be the third recommendation we are making to PAC. Moving on to talking a little bit about some of the prior steps we've taken with this amendment process. Just going over the public engagement we've done so far. So a public information session was held on February 5th, 2020, of this year. It was done in person and through live stream. So we had a similar presentation to this for residents to inform them of the possible changes, and ended with a question period for attendees. So there were 10 members present there. I think six of them were counselors. And we had three views during the live stream. There was no opposition to the proposed amendments. However, we did receive one comment during the question period inquiring how the zoning and redesignation of the areas would affect the retention of open space. Kind of the out of the three areas being affected that we're talking about here, the one area that would be directly affected by would be directly relevant to this question would be Area 3, which, if the recommendations are approved, would be formally recognized and protected as open space. But otherwise, when we're looking at, like, a larger scale of Osprey Village as a whole, not just Osprey Village, but other planned areas as well, and across the municipality, open space dedication is largely only done through the subdivision bylaw, which will not be affected by these specific amendments. However, the question was valuable because it did highlight the concern towards ensuring adequate open space is protected for the growing community of Osprey Village as a whole. So moving on to some of the stakeholder engagement we did on January 31st, staff inquired professional opinions on this plan review by contacting the following stakeholders. So we have some folks from the province, Nova Scotia Health, the RCMP. We reached out to the two fire departments that overlap on the Osprey Village. And we also contacted the South Shore Regional Center for Education and the CSAP, or the Provincial Council for Acadian Schools, in relation to the institutional zone that's to be affected, as well as some internal communication was done with our Department of Recreation, Department of Engineering, and Fire Services in our municipal office. So based on the engagement we had with our stakeholders and the feedback we received, we're just going to go and highlight some of the potential implications that these amendments could bring. So the first one we'll go over is environmental implication. So these are some of the comments we received from Nova Scotia Environment and Climate Change. So a key consideration when developing in Osprey Village is what is known as sulfide-bearing materials. So this is naturally occurring sulfide-bearing rocks are underground in the village. And so construction and development may disturb these sulfide minerals, which can be quite harmful to aquatic habitats. This is especially relevant to Osprey Village because of how close it is to the Lehigh River. As a way to mediate this, the Department of Environment recommended that whenever development does happen in the future, developers should be required to hire a consultant to conduct an environmental site assessment before development, just to make sure that the leaching of these like sulfide minerals doesn't happen. As well, they also had general recommendations about identifying wetlands and watercourses early within the planning stage, as well as confirming approvals for sewer line extension on service lands and making sure that appropriate on-site sewage disposal systems are in place for unserviced lands, respectively. So next is the health implications. This is based on feedback received from Nova Scotia Health. So according to their feedback, the changes to land use planning in Osprey Village can lead to several health outcomes related to mental health, physical activity, social connectedness, and inclusion, improved access to housing and amenities, among many other things. So the feedback we received from Nova Scotia Health comes with this multi-lensed view of what does it mean to be healthy in a community. I just kind of categorized it into a couple of themes they had based on the feedback we received. So one is housing accessibility. Oh, keep jumping back to this slide. Housing accessibility, according to Nova Scotia Health, is the accessibility and availability of housing for people does fall under the umbrella of what it means to live in a healthy community. But when they were looking at these amendments, they left a comment that potential new housing development or residential development that could come out of the amendments would likely increase local housing supply. But they did also note that the housing that does come out of this may not be suitable for affordable housing, especially in areas lacking public transit and walkability. People who live in affordable housing may not always have like a personal vehicle. And so these two things, like public transit and walkability and affordable housing, need to go hand in hand. So they recommend that a comprehensive housing strategy could help and assess and plan for adequate housing options whenever housing development does occur from these amendments. They left comments about a healthy and safe living environment. So making sure that whenever development happens on a vacant land where no prior development has happened before, they recommend that environmental assessments be done prior to development. More development will mean increased traffic, requiring plans. So they recommended that we require plans for road maintenance, safety, and noise mitigation. The Area 1 in the previous maps shown, it is currently zoned as light industrial, and it's surrounded by other properties that are zoned as light industrial. So they also noted that there may be potential conflicts with neighboring industrial uses, and so this should be considered whenever future development happens. They also kind of went more specific when looking at Area 2. And so here, because it is a institution, it's currently zoned institutional, and there are already institutional uses happening on the land, they recommended to maintain the 500-meter restriction that is currently in the Osprey Village Land Use Bylaw that would restrict licensed drinking establishments near institutional uses that exist on the area. and prohibiting the sale of and advertising of tobacco vaping products and cannabis to reduce youth exposure to these things in an area that has institutional uses like schools. They also highly recommended that future development should involve consultation with the school community, as well with a lot of children and students in the area. Pedestrian safety should be a priority, and we should implement crosswalks, sidewalks, and adequate lighting. As for comments left for Area 3, they noted that parking lots are permitted with an open space zone, and so the municipality should assess environmental impacts and implementation protections to preserve as much green space as possible in areas that are zoned open space. As well, active transportation networks should be enhanced to promote safe and convenient access to green spaces like this through connected sidewalks and trails. Next are the fire protection implications. So the fire protection services to Osprey Village are shared by Oak Hill Fire Department and Northfield Fire Department. The chiefs of the fire department stated that the level of development that could come from the amendments would not affect the service level as long as new development provides road access for fire trucks. And our municipal fire services coordinator also supported the feedback from the fire chiefs. Next would be police protection implications. So the feedback we received from the RCMP was pretty straightforward. They welcome new developments in the area as long as there is adequate street lighting, controlled intersection access, and consideration to CCTV capabilities to enhance public safety. They also noted that with more development in the area and the increase in population, on their end, they would also need to reassess the current fundings for RCMP resources. Next is transportation and traffic implications. This is based on feedback from the Department of Public Works, as well as our engineering department here in the municipal office. So comments from the from Public Works stated that the current road network in Osprey Village should have the capacity to support future development brought on by the amendments, and details about the capacity for this can be confirmed through work within highway right-of-way permit, which would be approved by Public Works, as well as a transportation impact study process also would be approved by them at the time of the development application. Additionally, they also commented that Area 2 in the plan should be accessed from Alley Champlain Drive and not Highway 10. And our municipal engineering department agreed with these comments. However, they did also note that increased vehicle and pedestrian traffic, as it is expected to increase in Area 2 with more development, higher density development, such as the recent Stonemont development. So more traffic is expected. So while the roads themselves are adequate, increased traffic may result in the need for traffic lights along Pine Grove and Nathan Cirillo Road, as well as Champlain Drive and Highway 10, pursuant to traffic studies. They also noted that sidewalks around the perimeter of Area 2 are also planned and will hopefully improve pedestrian safety in response to the increased residential density that we're already seeing and will likely continue to see. We also got a comment back from the South Shore Regional Center for Education. This was also fairly straightforward feedback. They currently don't have any objections to the amendments, and they do not anticipate any negative impacts to their education system. And finally, these are some comments we received from our recreational department. So as residential development is expected to continue to grow in Osprey Village, the retention of adequate open space to provide community character and recreational opportunities for residents should be a key consideration moving forward. This was also echoed by one of the comments received during our public information session. So while the Municipal Recreation Department does agree with the proposed amendments to rezone specific areas like Area 3 to open space, they also echoed that the comment during the information session that they also noted that areas encouraging multi-unit housing developments or commercial businesses should require a percentage of green space in their design plans or development, and just essentially making sure that green space is protected early on in the planning process and beyond just relying on the subdivision bylaw to have open space dedication. And so that's all of the feedback we've received so far. We do still have some outstanding feedback at this time. We're still waiting from the Bridgewater Public Services Commission, the CSAP, so the Provincial Council of Acadian Schools, as well as Emergency Health Services. So with that in mind, the PAC may choose to proceed with their recommendations to council with these outstanding comments still, as we're still awaiting these comments. If the PAC does decide to go this route, the comments that we eventually will receive from these parties will be reviewed by council during the first reading stage of the amended process. Alternatively, the PAC may also choose to wait to receive these outstanding comments before proceeding with their recommendation. So we're kind of coming close to the end here. So this leads us to our recommendations slash alternatives that the PAC can make. So with everything that was just stated, the motion for the Planning Advisory Committee to recommend the Municipal Council to give notice of its intention to approve and adopt the amendments to the Osprey Village Secondary Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw. And to proceed with first reading are ultimately the recommendations we're making here. There are some alternatives, so the PAC may decline these specific amendments and keep the existing plan for Osprey Village as is. They can defer this plan review and request additional information from staff or some of these outstanding comments. Or the third option is to approve the proposed review with conditions. So now that we've kind of covered a lot, all of the content and the recommendations, here's a little list of the next steps. So we've already completed the public information session. We're currently having our planning advisory committee now. So after this meeting, PAC can advise council or take any of the alternatives listed in the last slide. If PAC does decide to go ahead with making the recommendations to council, council will move on to first reading, then a public hearing will be held, and then council will proceed with second reading. The specific dates for these following steps are not decided on yet, and they'll probably largely be decided based on the decision that PAC members will make tonight on how to proceed with these recommendations. That's everything I had prepared for my presentation. Jeff let me know that one of the members of the committee wasn't able to be here in person tonight, and so he left some questions. Left some comments. So Jeff, I was just wondering, my presentation section is over here, but would it make sense to just kind of go over his comments here or just wait later or?
Yeah, I think now would be an appropriate time.
Okay. A couple of the comments we received after this member reviewed the memo that was sent out to PAC members. There's three comments that he left. So one is if the ongoing upgrades to Highway 103, keeping that in mind, is there any potential that future work in Bridgewater may impact the lands in Area 1? So this is the one on Harold Wynot Road. So, and kind of to add on to this comment, he also asked if we had contacted Public Works, which we did during our stakeholder engagement section. And according to at least their feedback, there shouldn't be any impact, or the roads should be able to still have enough capacity to support whatever development that could come out of amendments that would affect Area 1. In addition, as it stands now, there currently isn't any specific development application on Area 1. There was in the past, but so it could be that upgrades that are happening on Highway 103 currently could even be completed by the time that any future development does start happening on Area 1 or properties neighboring Area 1. The second comment that was left was, what are the different impacts to the French school in Area 2, depending on which option is chosen? So I guess this is more like kind of a clarification of like what the different, like how, yeah, essentially like how this would impact the French school specifically that is currently within Area 2. So this would be, I guess, the conflict of interest of, you know, them being a very strictly like institutional use, being a school, potential conflict of, you know, other uses like commercial uses, like stores or residential uses, like apartment buildings, stuff like that. Like how would they be impacted, by either, the entire area being, permitted to have those uses, so including their own property, as opposed to their property not being a part of that rezoning process. So the land that the school would stand on, kind of going back to option one of rezoning, only municipally owned properties in Area 1, they would essentially... all of the permitted uses that they have thus far experienced as a school would stay the exact same for that property, for the property that they're on. And so, yeah, just, I guess there would be like minimal or reduced conflict on the actual like land that the school currently operates on, or if they're interested in expanding the school property, whatever land that they currently own wouldn't be affected directly by the rezoning process is, I guess, the implications for the school, as opposed to if we went back to, if we chose option two of just adding commercial and residential uses as permitted as of right within the institutional zone, that automatically means that the property, including the property that the school is on, those uses would also be permitted. So in a way, option to would allow more flexibility for what uses are permitted for the school on their land, as opposed to option one. I guess you could look at it as they're avoiding any kind of potential conflict of uses on their land. So that's kind of essentially like what's at stake here in relation to the school specifically. And then the third comment that was left was if the rezoning and redesignation of Area 3 to become general commercial instead of open space considered. This was largely from consideration that Area 3 abuts existing general commercial lands, and it's along Pine Grove Road, so its access is quite convenient. If it ever is used for commercial use. So just to kind of answer that question, so many kind of development interests were had on Area 3, like different development proposals where developers approached the municipality about potentially doing something on Area 3, but as mentioned before, the site is quite small, and from comments, I understand that the soil gets quite swampy, and so based on site assessments that were done, for potential development that could have happened. The end result was always that just the environmental and site conditions would just make it really difficult for any kind of development to really happen there. And so based on that feedback, we think that the most appropriate use would just be to protect it as open space. So those were the three comments that were left. But I'd like to open up the floor for more questions, more comments, to go from here.
Thank you very much for your report, Corinne. And does anybody have a question? Okay, go ahead.
I have a question for clarification, and actually a couple questions for clarification. So in regards to area number one, the only permitted residential use right now as its zone would be a minimum of a 25-unit build?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And I think you had a slide up before on a motion, which was the staff's recommendation, grouping all three of these together. However, Area 2 has two recommendations, which I don't see broken down in the conclusion. So are we voting, is the committee voting on all three recommendations as a package, or are we voting on one, two, and three individually?
That's a good question. So it would be a package. So the final recommendation to council would be a package of, which would include, so at this stage, so the PAC can choose which option they want to go with specifically for Area 2, and whichever option they go with will be, kind of combined with the other two recommendations being made as one, whole recommendation to council. But that is one option. As kind of mentioned near the end here, the alternative would be to approve the recommendations with conditions. So, the PAC could decide to go ahead with approving some of the recommendations, or all three of them, or just one, or one will be approved the way that we presented it here today, or whereas the other two would be approved with site conditions that the PAC can discuss here and decide on. Thank but you. Ultimately, yes, everything kind of just has to be clumped together and presented to council at the end of the day.
Okay, and Mr. Merrill has some clarification.
Yeah, so if you want to look at the three recommendations that are in on the staff report and use that as your basis. But I guess what Corinne's saying is she's presented some alternative options there. But if you want to look at those motions, you can do them motion one, two, or three, or you could put them all together as a package. But it will be up to the committee members on. If you want to make a change to one of them, you could make a change to it and then do that one and then do the other one separate. Or you can, if you want to do it as is, you can do them as a package.
Do you have a supplementary question?
Yeah. Voting on as a package doesn't make any sense because Area 2 has two options. So before we could vote as a package, we would have to clarify which option we would be going with. The way it's presented doesn't make any sense to me. And also, in regards to area number one, I have some concerns. I understand that a developer would really want to develop that in the single-family residential properties where its location is. However, that would be a great piece of property for high-density residential as it's zoned now. And I don't know of any other properties in the area that could handle that high density residential build. And just I don't know if the committee is aware, but there is development in Halifax on the Pockwalk Road on unserviced lots that are high density that have their own wells and septics and are doing quite fine. So because that piece of property is on service doesn't mean it can't support a high density residential build. But again, I can understand why a developer would want that, build single-family residentials, because they can make a lot of money there. So if we're voting it as a package, I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm not in favor of it. I am in favor of Area 3 being rezoned to open space. That makes a lot of sense. And Area 2, I am in favor, and I would go with Option 2. But if Area 1 is rezoned to permit lower single-family residential, it'll never be able to go back to high density. And looking at the South Shore Health Report, and I think some of the goals are to have more high-density residential because that is more affordable for the public. I don't agree with rezoning Area Number 1. Thank you.
Councillor Bell.
We're hearing a recommendation that Area 3 or Lot 3 should be rezoned to allow as open space or nature land. I understand that at an earlier time there was some interest in that property by the Northfield Fire Department for auxiliary substation. Now, I see that during the report, there was consultation done by Oak Hill and Northfield Fire Department. So was there any expression of interest in that piece of property during those discussions?
Who's going to take this one?
Just in terms of the actual feedback and discussion we had during the engagement process, I can speak on that. We didn't receive any comments from neither fire department about Area 3 specifically or their interest to get involved in developing any kind of structures there. I don't know. If Jeff might know some of the specific history about prior development interests on that lot.
Yeah, I wasn't involved, so I'm not aware of those, but I think what Councillor Bell was getting at is whether or not they, when they got the letter, whether they expressed that concern at that time. But our understanding is that they did not.
Are there any other questions or comments? Hearing none. My mistake. Go ahead, Ms. Beck.
I just had one question, and it was about the Area 1. When we're looking at changing the zoning, it's only for that specific area. Am I understanding that correctly, or are we saying that about all unserviced lots?
So I just want to clarify that Area 1. I just wanted to clarify that the recommendation or the changes we're recommending for Area 1 isn't a rezoning recommendation. It's just changing basically the language of what specific properties can be exempt from this high density requirement. So we wouldn't be changing the zone. We would just be adding an additional specification in the permitted uses list of the light industrial zone, saying that these four PIDs can be exempt from the high density requirement. So we wouldn't be rezoning. We would just be adding an additional condition that would allow those specific PIDs to be exempt.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. With those clarifications, are we ready to move on to the vote? Are we looking for any other information for staff?
Just let me do a quick check of the YouTube comments just to make sure that no one's left a comment there.
There don't appear to be any comments online.
Correct. I don't see any comments, so you can proceed.
Okay, so we're going to address each of these motions one at a time, given that there were a couple of concerns expressed by one of the members here. So I'll look for somebody to move the first motion. Oh, certainly. Just a moment.
Before you bring any motions on the floor, I'd like to hear Mr. Melman's point of view again. As an individual that is in land development or real estate, he made some points there that I want to make sure I understand, and because I respect what he's got to say. So if you give Mr. Melman permission to speak, I'd like to hear that again, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Well, my understanding is when I read this is that Area 1 is just one, and when I try to look it up on the property online mapping, is just one PID. And if that was the case, changing that from L1 to a lighter residential, a single family residential area, that would then not allow high density residential properties in that area, because you're not going to get that back after you change it from high to low. You're not going to go from low to high. And to say that high density residential properties are not viable or not easily built on unserviced lots, I don't agree with that, because, like I said, I do know of development in HRM on the Pocklock Road that are on unserviced lots, and there's an 8 and a 14-unit building that was just recently built, and I think there's a 120-unit building being built that has its own septic, but I do think that might have been tied into the water. So there is options for high density residential. Now, if staff is saying that they're not changing the zoning from light industrial, just adding an exemption, which I guess the developer would have then to come back to council and ask for the exemption, that may be different. But I only see one PID, and which is a 12-acre parcel of land there, and if it's only one PID and it gets changed from high density to low density, I don't agree with that. But if there's other PIDs there, like there was a presentation, there was four, but when I went on property online mapping, I didn't see that. So,
Mr. Merrill, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify what the amendment. So currently in the light industrial zone, it refers back to uses that are permitted in the general commercial zone, which one of those requirements is a residential use with a minimum density of 25 units a hectare. So what this amendment would do would allow those properties in the light industrial zone that are unserviced to be exempt from that requirement, but it wouldn't prevent the higher density. So if a developer came along and wanted to do higher density, that would be permitted there. What this is saying, so we have some experience working with some developers that looked at that site and that wanted to do some higher density, but the way the lot configuration would be, they ran into some problems and wouldn't be able to actually meet that requirement. So it identified a concern that it's like, well, maybe in the unserviced, because it's too far away to hook to the sewer, it would be way too expensive, that maybe we would open up and allow other options by making those areas that can't be serviced by central sewer, wouldn't be able to meet that density requirement based on the lot configuration, but it wouldn't prevent a higher density from going there.
So can I ask which PID numbers are subject to this amendment, because on Property Online, the only PID number that I can find is 604-87824. That looks like the one that's encompassed, that's highlighted there in yellow, which is a 12-acre parcel. And I believe the presentation, one of the slides, well, right there it is, specifies these four PIDs in the LUB, which I don't see. I only see one parcel being highlighted, and that has a PID number consisting of 12 acres at the moment.
Corinne, you want to go ahead?
I guess I just kind of wanted to clarify, at the very beginning when we're highlighting, these three specific areas, the intention was to explain that these areas were the catalyst for us recognizing that there was potential issues to the planning document. So, obviously, in the slide, a couple slides after this that we just saw, one of the recommendations we're making would affect more than just Area 1. But we're just saying that Area 1 was the specific property that had some development interest in the past that didn't quite work out due to the current policies and regulations. I just kind of want to clarify that the areas that are being highlighted, it's a bit confusing, I agree, because Area 2 and Area 3, they're just very specific to, the changes being made are just in those areas, but the way that they were highlighted and presented were intended to just say, these were the specific areas that were initially brought to us, the specific properties and case studies that were brought to us that opened up this larger discussion of what needs to be changed. So, I just kind of wanted to make sure that, even though, we highlighted Area 1 as this one specific property, it's intended to show that, similar properties could also be facing the same issue, and that's why later in the slides we're talking about other properties.
Go ahead.
Well, if that was the case, I would have preferred to see all the PID numbers listed that was could be potentially involved, and because they're not, and as you said, it's very confusing. I still don't support Area 1 without more work being provided to, or more information being provided to us. Thank you.
Any further discussion or questions on this specific topic? Go ahead, Councillor Moore.
So this needs to be passed tonight to go to council? Is it time sensitive?
It does not have to. Mm-hmm. It's up to the committee. So one of your options, you can obviously make a motion. You can alter a motion. So you could add the PIDs if you want additional information.
Yeah,
for additional information.
Yeah, I don't understand this.
Yeah. So one of the things.
Can I just jump in here, Jeff? Pardon me. I'm sorry. This is.
Mr. Merrill finish his point, if you don't mind, Councillor Brooks, and then I'll recognize
you. Pardon me. I'm sorry. I didn't hear him.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, one of your options is so you could. And maybe might help clarification is that ask staff for the, so when it gets to council, we would have a draft amending bylaw that would actually list out this is the actual wording of the bylaw amendments. So what you could ask is staff to come back with that. So our intention was to bring that to council, but the PAC can ask for that and we can bring that back to the next meeting. And I think that would help on that clarification, because then you would say, this is the actual text that is going to change in the land use bylaw. So then it wouldn't, I think that would help with clarity.
Yeah, I agree. Councillor Brooks, did you have something you'd like to contribute?
Thank you. No, not after that. I feel the same way. I would just like to have a little bit more clarification and a bit more time to make sure we're making the best decision. Thank you.
Okay, so does staff need further direction or a motion on that, or is that sufficient for that specific area?
If you're not prepared to make a motion, yeah, we can take that direction, and we'll bring that back at your next. Mm-hmm. We can bring that back at your next meeting.
Okay, I think I'm seeing general consensus yes. around the table, so that's how we'll proceed with the first motion there. Would somebody like to put the second motion on the floor?
Before we put that second motion on the floor, there's two options. Are we voting on each option first, and then making a motion?
Yes, thank you. That actually would be a much better idea. So, with the two options, just a moment.
We need to see the two options again on screen.
Yeah, could we get those two options on screen, please? Maybe we'll just do a show of hands for option one and then a show of hands for option two. Is that the best way to proceed here, do you think? Yeah. Okay, so those who are in favor of option one.
Yep. One for me.
I'm in favor of option one.
Okay, and option two. And myself included. So I think we're going to vote on option two. Go ahead, Mr. Merrill.
What I'd suggest is that if you provide the direction that, say, option two is what the committee would like to go with, again, we can bring all three sets of amendments back.
Okay, yes.
But what we'll do is we'll draft it with option two in that amendment package.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. Okay. In that case, we're going to move on to number three.
Can we bring number three back too?
Well, are we doing it
all? Are we just doing one motion when it comes time to it, or because we're sent one and two is coming back?
Yeah.
And is three now a separate motion, or is three going to be included with one and two?
I think what would be helpful is maybe you can have a discussion about the motion. Three, but not actually. So is that what you want staff to bring back? So then it's clear on one, two, and three. This is what you're asking staff to bring back. So at the next meeting, we can bring back what you're looking for.
Okay. So any comments on number three? At this time,
may I ask? Maybe it's a bit of a dumb question, but
go ahead.
If no one can develop that, is there a reason why we have to rezone it to be open space? Is this just to stop people from thinking they can, and then they go to look at it and they can't, and it's just trying to save kind of time and money on that way? Like, I'm not too I think it's great to do an open space. I'm just not 100% certain what the motivation is here.
Yeah, so that property is owned by the municipality. You could leave it as R3, but what the suggestion was, we were bringing other amendments, and we figured, well, we'd throw that amendment in because there was some discussion at the staff level and at the director level too that it be considered open space, just because it was several developers had looked at it and it wasn't appropriate. It's not appropriate site.
Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mayor McLean-Wile.
I think, to that, there have been several residents that have raised it as a concern because that live in that area, and I think there was generally, I heard a bit of relief that we were going to designate it as open space for the fact that then there wouldn't be a development there. So there were issues raised by some community members as well.
And it is very marshy.
Okay, so it sounds go like ahead. The consensus is number three, when it comes back, we won't be changing it, so that's good. Yeah, right?
Sorry, just so I'm clear, Kathy, or Councillor Moore, when it comes back, you're suggesting that it come back as option three in the report so that it comes back with the amendment that it be an open space zone?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
All right. Is there any further discussion, questions, or comments? Go ahead, Councillor Moore.
So you say it's not time sensitive, but do we need to wait a month? I don't know if we're going to meet monthly or what, but... what's your suggestion? Do we need to meet? Is a month okay?
For these, yes. There's no, were the municipalities the applicant in this stage? So there's, it's not like we're, by waiting a month, we're holding up somebody from developing anything. Yeah. And there will be a meeting next month. We have items coming. So it's good that you had a lot of the discussion tonight. Is that the next meeting? I think it would be fairly straightforward, and we'll have lots of time for the other item.
I appreciate that, because there is one, two, three members at least that are new to this planning advisory, and I think it's best that if we have more time, we can understand a little bit better and make the right decision.
And I will note that there are still a few stakeholders whose comments are outstanding on this, so maybe it will give us time to see comment from them.
But,
go ahead.
Just one other question is that, so when we looked at our second point about the two choices of for the rezoning, for option one or option two, so we're just going to go with option two? If I'm understanding that correctly now, is that correct?
I think that was what was most favored around the table, but
okay.
If there's further discussion on it or people want clarification, I think now's the time.
Yeah, you know what? I was curious as so I thought option one was because staff recommended it. I thought that there was a better benefit for, I'm assuming, the people who are already there, who are already like the school and Lumina Health. So that's why I was saying option one, because I figured there might be more to this. But if there isn't more to this, I just would like to know.
That's essentially like why we recommended it as recommended option one over option two. Again, it is up to PAC members, which one they think is better. The idea was that the existing institutional uses will likely continue to, go along with, strictly being institutional in their use or land use. And so by going with option one, we're essentially excluding all of these existing institutional properties from the rezoning process, allowing for other commercial and residential uses. We're basically excluding these existing institutional properties from being influenced by these other uses being permitted, is what option one is going for. Option two essentially would just be blanket, it would be a blanket change for this entire area. Like any, regardless of the property, commercial and residential uses would be added to the list of what is permitted, regardless of who owns the property or if it's an existing institutional use. That is what option two would create, essentially.
And neither of the existing properties now, they have not given any feedback on this?
No, we haven't received any comments from this. We as mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, we sent out a notice of these amendments to all neighboring properties and affected areas. We haven't received a comment. One of the outstanding feedback we're still waiting from is the CSAP, so the provincial, the Acadian School Board, essentially, which we reached out to them because of the school being there, and they have yet to give us back comments as well. So, yeah, we haven't really received any input as to what they think about this.
Okay, and that would be the same with Lumia Health?
Yes.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. So I think we're just going to wait until staff comes back to us on this one as well then. So unless there are any further questions or discussion, I think we'll move on. Seeing none. There are no further items, nothing under Heritage Advisory. No in camera. Our next meeting date is scheduled for Thursday, March 27th, 2025. And did we want to check online just quickly to make sure that there's no comments there before we seek a motion for adjournment? Okay, seeing no further comments, I'll seek a motion for adjournment. So moved by Ms. Meck. Second. Councillor Bell. Do we need to vote on that? Or is, nope. In that case, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.